Welcome back to the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast, a 9-part series devoted to Fabry disease. Throughout this series, we hear from Fabry disease experts, patients, and caregivers who share practical advice, insights, and perspectives on living with this rare disease. Rarely Heard Fabry Disease is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and is intended for an international audience outside the USA. In this episode, we have Dr. Charles De Naro from Australia and Dr. Charles Lorenzo from Brazil, who will discuss Fabry disease management using various treatments. We find out how Fabry disease therapy works and how interventions should be tailored to meet the needs of individual patients.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Charles De Naro, and I work at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital in Brisbane, Australia. I am an internal medicine specialist and clinical pharmacologist, and I often look after patients who are quite unwell in hospital with multi-system problems. My other job that I do is that I look after patients with Fabry disease. And in fact, I look after patients with Fabry disease across the whole state of Queensland and in northern New South Wales. Now I'm going to hand over to Dr. Charles Lorenzo in Brazil.
Hi, thank you, Dr. De Naro. I am Professor Charles Lorenzo. I'm a professor of neurogenetics and biochemical genetics at the Faculdade of Medicina of São José de Rio Preto in São Paulo, Brazil. My interests include the clinical and molecular aspects of adult onset lysosomal disorders of the brain and other inborn errors of metabolism. And our center was also involved in early clinical trials for treatment of Fabry disease with chaperone and ERT.
All right, Dr. Lorenzo, I'm going to ask you a few questions that I hope that you can expand on. In the last episode, I was talking about how the early diagnosis of Fabry disease is really important so that patients can receive appropriate care and treatments. For this episode, let's talk more about the patient's journey after the diagnosis of Fabry disease is established. Could you please share your overall management strategy for patients with Fabry disease?
Well, each patient with Fabry disease requires a comprehensive and a tailored multidisciplinary treatment plan. And we try to emphasize that in some cases, it's very important to do a routine of annual and sometimes biannual testing for heart disease, sometimes brain MRI, evaluation of hearing, vision. And we need to explain to the patient that sometimes it's like we are doing like a preventive approach to monitor if something comes up and the manifestation, especially in the patients that are not very symptomatic or the patients that they are diagnosed through a family screening. So it's important to show that although it appears a lot of evaluations, it's very important to better assess the patients and understand the impact of that mutation and the enzyme deficiency in each patient of the family.
Great. When you use the word multidisciplinary, you mean that you will recruit lots of other medical specialists to help you manage the patient. Is that correct?
Well, we try to bring this team together. Sometimes when we work in a university hospital, it's good because we have very professional and a very specialized expert team. But sometimes it's hard to put everybody together in the same clinics. So we try at least to discuss every case with the different medical specialties. And we try to put them together for each patient.
Right. And of course, you need to deal with people with pain, tummy troubles, hearing loss or ringing in the ears. As you said, patients get cardiovascular problems, so they often get short of breath. So that has to be looked after by a cardiologist. They may get racing of the heart, palpitations. And of course, Fabry disease affects the blood vessels. So you want to make sure that everything you can do to protect the blood vessels, blood pressure, cholesterol, etc., adopt a healthy lifestyle, try to stop smoking, improving diabetes if you have diabetes, and lots of exercise is important to help patients with Fabry disease lead a healthy life.
Yes, and for example, now we are seeing the importance of bringing together a psychological support team for the patients. It's not rare to have a depression with a chronic rare disease, but in Fabry disease, we see that a lot of patients are depressive mood disorders, and sometimes it can affect the follow-up. He did not feel motivated or feel very sad about the disease. And having a psychologist in our team really makes a difference.
Yes, that's really important. All my patients have issues that they wish to discuss, and they're concerned about work-life balance. And of course, we might ask them to do a whole lot of tests as well, which takes a lot of time out of work or out of family life. And we need to support them and guide them through the maze of the health system. So now we know a bit about the challenges our patients face, which can be pretty overwhelming. Let's go over the different treatment options available. Could you give us an overview of the treatment modalities for Fabry disease?
Well, we have both the specific therapies for Fabry disease and the palliative or adjunctive therapies for Fabry disease. In the past, we only had the possibility of doing the adjunctive therapies that are targeted to treat symptoms of the patient, like pain, the gastrointestinal discomfort that some patients have, the high blood pressure. And the specific therapies, they started with the enzyme replacing therapy that is now the cornerstone of treatment for Fabry disease, and the oral chaperone therapy. We try to explain to the patients the therapy of Fabry disease. It does not only involve specific therapy, because sometimes patients think, okay, I'm receiving the enzyme, so I don't need to do anything else. They forget that the proper follow-up is very important to avoid complications that can happen even if you are under ERT or oral chaperone therapy. And it's very important, for example, to measure in some patients some biomarkers to see if they are really doing the replacement therapy, for example, at the scheduled time.
Yes, so very important for the doctor looking after the patient to tailor the therapy that works best for the patient. And of course, you use the term biomarkers. And for our audience, that means, my understanding is that often simple blood tests just to check that the disease is under control. Is that how you use that yourself?
Yes. Usually the day of the appointment, we draw the blood, or sometimes we pick up the finger and said, okay, let's see how your lyso-Gb3. And it's funny because usually they absorb the name and they said, doctor, how is my Gb3 this month? It's interesting because they understand this, because sometimes when they see that the Gb3 is decreasing and it is stable, it's like a reassuring that the therapy is working fine. At least they have a number.
Some of our patients do come with organ trouble, a heart failure, kidney failure, and there's plenty of other things that we can do. We use special therapies to help the heart pump better. We use therapies to improve shortness of breath. If they have palpitations or even blackouts, we can have cardiac devices, pacemakers, for instance, that can prevent that from happening. And of course, if they have bad kidney disease from Fabry disease, there is still dialysis, kidney transplants, and lots of other things that we can do or ask our colleagues in concert with us to improve patients' life, improve their lifestyle, improve their quality of life, and improve their lifespan. All right. Now, enzyme replacement therapy, or we will call this ERT, is the cornerstone of Fabry treatment. It's the specific therapy and especially important for our classic type of disease. Can you tell us more about this enzyme replacement therapy?
Well, we have this enzyme replacement therapy as our cornerstone for treatment of Fabry disease. Usually the patients, there's no counterindication for ERT in Fabry patients. It's independent of the type of mutation that the family harbors, for example. Usually the ERT, we are using both in adult and children. Usually when we have a diagnosis of a Fabry patient, we try to screen for other family members and to see if they are symptomatic. The idea is to start the ERT in the patients that has clinical symptoms, and at least they have some increase of the glycolytic sphingosine, in the case the lyso-Gb3, because a way of working with the enzyme replacement therapy is you give the enzyme that the patient has a natural and inborn deficiency of this enzyme. So you need to give this enzyme every 2 weeks. It's very important because it's the time of this recombinant enzyme. It can last in the body. So if you stop the infusion for two, 3 months, you can have a setback in your treatment. So it's very important to understand that there's a reason to have this management of the regular infusions. And one of the points that we have is that the patients under enzyme replacement therapy, they have usually a very good response, in particular if they don't have a very advanced disease. It's very important to monitor the patient, in particular because sometimes the patients, they have a very silent disease and they have, for example, cardiomyopathy. They are not aware and they do not have clinical symptoms. But for example, you see in the heart a very good response with ERT. And it's very important, for example, for some patients that have a very hard time to manage the pain. Usually when you associate ERT with the patient, you can better manage the pain in this population.
Great, great. So enzyme replacement therapy gets out of the body this glycolipids, glycosphingolipids, or this fatty sugar molecules. And certainly in my patients, and I'm sure you see it as well, very soon their tummy pain and diarrhea improves, their energy improves. Some of my patients start to sweat again, and interesting enough, they don't like it. It's totally foreign for them. And their exercise tolerance improves as well. You mentioned the word cardiomyopathy, and just for our audience, that means that the heart is involved with the disease. And so we are there trying to protect the heart and protect the kidneys as much as we can with this treatment. So how useful is enzyme replacement therapy, and what are some of its limitations, Dr. Lorenzo?
Well, we have at least 20 years of experience with ERTs. So we can see that we have a great number of improvement in the patients. And in some patients, we can stabilize the disease. In other patients, we can slow the progression of kidney decline. The limitations are usually when the patient has a very advanced renal or cardiac disorder. For example, some patients have already heart fibrosis. And we know that the fibrosis cannot be reversed by enzyme replacement therapy. And other patients, they are already with severe kidney failure, undergoing dialysis, and we cannot revert that with ERT. It's interesting because we have some patients that underwent kidney transplant, and even these patients, we still going on with the ERT because we are thinking in protecting other organs, not only the kidney. And sometimes even these patients that are transplanted, the new kidney can start to have accumulation of lyso-Gb3 of this glycosphingolipid that accumulates in patients' Fabry disease. So it's also useful in this setting. Other patients, we need to remind the patients that the recombinant enzyme cannot cross the blood barrier. This is a barrier that protects the brain. It's good to protect for example, infections, but since the enzyme is a large molecule, the enzyme does not cross very well the blood barrier. So sometimes many of the internal cerebral manifestations of the disease, we cannot guarantee that ERT can avoid them. Only when they have the problems with the vascular arterial system, the vessels of the brain, in this case, we can change the velocity of the flow of the blood so you can avoid some cerebrovascular events.
Yes, so enzyme can't get into the brain, but it might improve the blood vessels in the brain a little bit. And that's why we think it is helpful. But unfortunately, occasionally patients can still get strokes or changes in the brain despite enzyme replacement therapy. You mentioned the word fibrosis, and for our audience, that means scarring. And so once the scarring in the heart or the kidneys, nothing can fix that. So that's why it's so important to start treatment as early as possible. What about the downsides of getting the infusions every 2 weeks, and sometimes people have reactions to infusions? You'd like to tell us about your experience with that?
Well, the problems with the regular therapy is that many patients have difficulties and being absent after work. And sometimes when children have the problems with the school as well. So we try to, when possible, to do home infusions, especially in the patients that live very far away from our center. I know that in not every country is possible to do the home infusion, but can be a way to bring the patient closer to the compliance of the infusions. Sometimes we have problems with some patients, especially male patients that can have a very severe enzyme deficiency. These patients, they can develop some antibodies to the enzyme, and they can have some adverse effects, reactions, sometimes some months, sometimes years after starting ERT.
Okay, Dr. Lorenzo, why don't you tell us about this other therapy, this oral chaperone therapy? What is it and what kind of patients would benefit from it?
The oral chaperone therapy is a therapy that is based in the possibility of changing the structure of the enzyme. Sometimes when the patient has a mutation, the enzyme is made in a way that's very odd, so it cannot reach the lysosome. So it's destroyed before reaching the lysosome. So when you use the chaperone, you can stabilize this enzyme, change its formation, conformation, and can reach the lysosome. So very important points. It can cross the brain-blood barrier. It's an oral therapy. It can give independence for the patient to avoid the intravenous infusion, for example. And for some patients, it can be very helpful in the way they work or they live their lives. But there are other points, specifically to the use of the therapy, because some patients have a hard time to use it every other day. So it's very important that the patients that are under oral chaperone, they have a very close follow-up to see if they are taking the medication correctly, if they understand the way the therapy works, and sometimes to see if they have issues in the compliance in the way of using. We had this problem in the past with some patients.
And of course, Dr. Lorenzo, unfortunately, it only works in a percentage of patients. Do you want to tell us more about that?
Yes, this is one of the main points that we need to explain to the patient. The oral chaperone only works in patients that have specific mutations, like missense mutations, that are type of mutation that change the sequence of the protein, the formation. So only less than 1/3 of Fabry patients are in fact amenable to this therapy.
Yes. But of course, if you have a change in the Fabry gene and you can take an oral medicine, then of course you don't have to be jabbed with infusions with enzyme replacement therapy. You're not tied to hospitals or home infusion centers, and you can get on with your life just taking a medicine that has to be taken every second day. And I know that there are reminders, for instance, apps on phones that can remind you to take that medicine every second day. That's the most important thing.
Yes, because some patients, they can take the medication every day. And so if they do this, it disrupts the function of the molecule because it needs a resting day to the chaperone be released from the body. We have spoken, Dr. Denaro, about lyso-Gb3 as a biomarker for management of Fabry disease. What would be the limitations and the benefits of using this biomarker?
Okay, so lyso-Gb3 is one of these sugar fatty molecules, glycosphingolipids, which accumulates in Fabry disease. And it's quite a difficult thing to measure. So you need to have a very good laboratory that can measure it. And in Australia, we have just one laboratory, a central laboratory, actually in Adelaide in Australia, which is still not clear whether this biomarker tells us 100% whether a patient will get into trouble. But we do know that enzyme replacement therapy and the chaperone therapy brings the lyso-Gb3 down. And clearly, you want to reduce the amount of glycosphingolipids or these sugar fatty molecules as low as possible. But it's still not clear at the present moment whether it definitely predicts complications from the disease. So it is one factor that we follow, but it's not the only factor that we follow. You've got to remember that Fabry disease affects multiple organs and multiple vessels. And so this is one part of the puzzle, and it's important to keep it low as possible, but it may not be the whole answer to managing the disease. The other thing to note is that patients who have mild mutations of the Fabry gene, and women particularly, their lyso-Gb3s can be really low, and in fact, you can't measure it, and yet those patients can still get into trouble from Fabry disease. So that's another problem with the lyso-Gb3. So it is useful. We watch it. We make sure that when, for instance, we put someone on oral chaperone therapy, that the lyso-Gb3 remains stable or as low as possible, but it does not tell us the full answer.
So just to recap for our patients, the cell is making the enzyme, but it's a bit defective and it gets broken down before it can get into the lysosome. And this chaperone oral treatment fixes that, allows it to not get broken down, allows it to get into the lysosome. And then once it's in the lysosome, because the acid, my lysosome has got a low pH and acid environment, that chaperone goes away. And then the enzyme there can work. And of course, to do that, we have to give it every second day. And it can be hard for sometimes for patients to remember that. The other thing, of course, is that being a small molecule, it can get across, we think, across the blood-brain barrier into the brain. And so it might be very important for patients that have brain issues, but that's yet to be proven. But as I said, and as you've pointed out, they've just got to remember to take it every second day, because otherwise it won't work as well. And there are lots of different reminders that we can give our patients so that they can remember to take it every second day. All right, so let's talk about the adjunctive therapies or other kinds of treatment available. How do they help relieve symptoms and improve quality of life?
In particular, the adjunctive therapies are very important to patients that have everyday symptoms like pain. We try to not encourage self-medication for pain. Sometimes, okay, they use non-steroidal inflammatory drugs, but some patients can take excessive anti-inflammatory for the pain. So we try to show that the management of pain is a daily fight. And usually we need to sometimes reassess the medication, change or combine. Usually the combination can be very helpful for some patients. Sometimes you can identify triggers for the painful crisis. For example, in Brazil, in very hot days, we advise the patient to avoid the temperature changes because it can be a trigger for a painful crisis, especially in young patients, children, for example. In terms of hypohidrosis, it's more difficult, but usually the patients, they do not complain about the hypohidrosis. Sometimes when they start the ERT, they start to sweat again. And they said, okay, I don't like to be sweaty all the time because they use it to not sweat. But it's very important, the hydrosis, to better control the temperature, the body temperature. So we try to explain, okay, you don't like to be sweaty, but it's nice to control your temperature, especially on hot days. The angiokeratomes can be a very important issue in some patients. Usually in male patients, we have this problem, and some female patients as well. And you usually talk to dermatology people to do laser surgery on these patients. And some patients, their results are very, very good. But it's important to know that some patients that are not under therapy, for example, they can come back.
Yes, you mentioned a couple of things. Hypohidrosis, just for our audience, that means a lack of sweating, which is a lot of our patients complain of. And the angiokeratomas, of course, is the skin rash, that red spotty skin rash that's so classical of patients with Fabry disease. All right, what about the kidneys and the heart? What about that? What do we do for that, Dr. Lorenzo?
But we usually, when I have a diagnosis of Fabry patient, we always ask our first evaluation with the cardiologist and nephrologist. We try to explain about the use of anti-hypertensive medication to control the blood pressure. We show that using this medication is as important as the specific therapy, because some patients, I don't know why, they think that they do not need to use medications for control the blood pressure because they are under specific therapy. And they explain that the combination of the therapies can have the best effect for them. And usually we advise to never miss an appointment with the nephrologist, especially because we know that some patients can have a decline in the kidney function along the decades.
Yes, the medicines that we use to help the kidneys improves the filter in the kidney. It makes it work better. And what about tummy symptoms and cholesterol and leg swelling? What do we do with those problems?
Well, the part of the abdominal, the tummy issues, usually in our experience, the children complain more than adults. The adults complain more about diarrhea, not about the pain, but the children complain more about the pain. In children, it's very difficult to treat the pain. We know that this abdominal pain, sometimes after eating, they feel bloated after eating, and sometimes they have this urgency to go to the bathroom, and we try to explain how they can avoid this, sometimes eating less and more frequent to avoid this bloating issues. And the adult patients, sometimes we see a connection with the very high fat ingest. In Brazil, we have some bad habits. So people like fatty food, grease food. So usually these patients, these Fabry patients, they have more problems with diarrhea and abdominal pain. So we try to change the habits, trying to look for a more Mediterranean diet, try to use more natural health food. Usually we don't have a lot of patients with high cholesterol. It's funny. I know that some patients, Fabry disease, they can have high cholesterol. But in our population, we don't have a lot. We have some patients. Usually those patients, they have the combo. They have high cholesterol and they smoke and they drink a lot. So we try to explain that this kind of habits, they can have an impact of the disease. Because even the people that don't have Fabry disease, if you have a very high cholesterol diet and you smoke and you drink, you can have issues with heart and brain problems, stroke, for example. And if you have Fabry disease, you have more susceptibility to this. So we try to encourage the patients to, well, change habits of life.
Yes, and sometimes we give them medicines to reduce the chance of blood clotting, and that helps as well. But I agree completely. Improving blood vessel health is so important for patients with Fabry disease, because Fabry disease does affect the blood vessels. All right, why don't we go to the next issue, Dr. Lorenzo, and that is about the future. So what are the new therapies available or coming on the horizon?
Well, we have now a lot of clinical studies in Fabry disease. I can say that the Fabry disease is a privileged disease in commons, because we have a lot of studies undergoing. We have studies with second generation enzyme replacement therapy that are enzyme replacement therapies that have a more specific targeting and can last more in the body. We have some studies with substrate reduction therapy that we already have this substrate reduction therapy for other lysosomal disorders like Gaucher disease. So in this case, it's a different strategy from the oral chaperone. In this case, we use our oral molecule to decrease the accumulation of the synthesis of the glycosphingolipid, the lyso-Gb3. So we use medications to inhibit the production of those substrates. But this substance cannot inhibit as a whole. It's only partial inhibition, because we need the substrate to live. And this is a strategy that worked with Gaucher disease, and there are some studies now for Fabry disease. We also have the molecular therapies using modulation of RNA and also the gene-based therapies. There are some trials undergoing in North America, and it's a very important step, not only for Fabry disease, for other lysosomal disorders.
Yes, so managing patients with Fabry disease can be quite daunted by all the technical issues and the constraints on their lives, or the time that it takes to have the management and the treatment. I have to admit, my experience is that patients are concerned, particularly starting enzyme replacement therapy, because they know that they've got to travel to hospital. It may be a long way away from where they live. They may have to take time off work or school. And of course, they are tied to with enzyme replacement therapy every 2 weeks. Some do not like having a needle into their vein to get the enzyme replacement therapy. But I have to admit, over time, patients get used to this and find a way of fitting in with the enzyme replacement therapies. And then, of course, once we can get them onto home infusion programs, their quality of life definitely improves. But it is some concerns for patients, particularly at the start. What's your experience, Dr. Lorenzo?
Well, as Australia, Brazil is also a continental country. And I think that the patients are very happy because they can be treated. But at the same time, they have worries about the traveling for example, the infusions. So we try to create a plan saying, okay, we can start here in the hospital. And after we assess the safety and the comfort, we can go to your hometown. Because in Brazil, we have a program called type of a family doctor, but for some rural and some very isolated cities. So we go to that city and we train all the team that takes care of all the diseases in that town or in that area. We give some talks about Fabry disease. We explain that the infusions are not very difficult to handle, and explain if they have problem, they can contact us. And in our experience, it worked a lot to bring the patient closer to the therapy to avoid, for example, skipping infusions or be not able to go to the hospital.
Yes, I make sure that I've talked to the local doctors there and make sure I'm available for the local doctors to give me a call if they've got any questions. I think it's really important for the patient to understand this disease, understand all the issues, and understand why having enzyme replacement therapy in particular helps to get rid of this excess sugar fatty molecules, these glycosphingolipids. It helps to improve quality of life. It stabilizes organs. And there's also, if they're on oral medicines, like the oral chaperone therapy, there are aids and apps in phones to help you remember to take the medicines, no doubt. If they want to travel, we can organize enzyme replacement therapies in different towns that they're visiting as well. The next question I have is, how do you help patients manage their emotional well-being and navigate the treatment journey, especially when it does take time for the symptoms to improve.
We try to be down to earth about expectations, because sometimes the patients, they have a very unrealistic expectations. It's not a cure. It's a treatment as we treat other diseases. For example, hypertension. We do not cure hypertension. We treat whole life. It's an everyday basis follow-up of the patients. And we need to show that the fiber disease is a commitment as well from the patient, from the family, from the physician, from the medical team. But we know that some patients, they have a very good support, both economical and psychological. And other patients, they don't have. Sometimes the patient is more afraid that fiber disease can bring economical problems because he will miss a day of work and he only receives the money for one day of work, for example. So we try to work about this part of this psycho-economical aspect of the disease, because for some of our patients, the economical part, the burden of the economical part can impact the way they comply to the treatment.
Okay. All right. I think that covers most of the things that we need to talk about. I suppose we should say to our patients, however, that enzyme replacement therapy and oral chaperone therapy, they don't cure the disease, but it helps stabilize the disease and helps to improve things. But unfortunately, these treatments are not 100% perfect. They don't actually cure the disease.
Yes, yes. It's very important, because I had a patient that told me, if there is no cure, why treat? Let the disease take the course. And they explained that the difference is that you cannot cure, but is it treatable? So yes, it makes a difference. If you have a proper follow-up and guidance in your therapy, then you let everything loose. And we need to explain this for the patients, because I know that living with a chronic disease is very challenging, because every day you are reminded that you have a disease that will follow you until your last day of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Compared to Fabry disease patients, when these treatments weren't available, people are living much longer because these treatments are available, because we're looking after them closely, and their quality of life is so much better than what it was, say, before the big turn of the century, really. So while treatment is not a complete cure, it makes such a great difference to our Fabry patients than ever before. All right, I might now just wrap up this session, and no doubt Dr. Lorenzo can remind me some of the things that I might have missed here. But as you can see, we discussed Fabry disease affects multiple things in a patient. It can affect the heart, kidneys, the brain. It can cause pain, and it can cause tummy disturbances and hearing trouble. So we need to have a comprehensive management plan, and we need to involve a team of physicians and nursing staff and psychologists to help the patient. And there are specific treatments available, enzyme replacement therapy and oral chaperone therapy. It does require coordination from a lot of people, and it does mean that people do have some implications on their lifestyle, that they may have to come in to have treatment from time to time. They need to have testing, but it will make a difference in patients with Fabry disease. Also, on the horizon, there's a whole host of new treatments that are being tested as we speak. There's no doubt that there is a lot that we can do for our patients. It's very important, however, for our patients to understand how the disease works, understand the treatments, so that they are better armed, ask the right questions when they see their doctors. Dr. Lorenzo, is there anything else you'd like to add about this session?
Just to emphasize the role of the multidisciplinary approach for each patient, and sometimes in the same family, the follow-up can differ from one patient to other patient, because you need to tailor to the specific aspects of the disease and different members of the family.
Yes, absolutely. There is a large variety from one patient to the next, one family member to the next, and we have to tailor management for that patient. The other thing I wanted to remind everyone is that in part, Fabry disease affects the blood vessels, and so good blood vessel health is important. And so that's why we will also focus on lifestyle, smoking, blood pressure, cholesterol, exercise, because that helps blood vessels to be healthy and will help us avoid the complications of Fabry disease. Well, that's it for today's episode. And thank you, Dr. Lorenzo, for joining in this discussion.
Well, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to this episode of Rarely Heard on Fabry disease.
That's it for this episode of the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the discussion with Dr. Denaro and Dr. Lorenzo. Support the podcast by subscribing, sharing it with others, or leaving a rating. In the next episode, we take a deep dive with Dr. Denaro into how the heart and kidneys are affected by Fabry disease and how best to manage these complications. This podcast series is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and is intended for an international audience outside the USA.